so much to do, so little time. Such time.
Michael, bow down to your superior intellect.
Well done.
Morning, sir.
Morning.
Welcome to the world of the people who are awake.
I've been awake.
Oh, all right.
Hello.
Dancing. I might have left you at home. Now that I think about it, I don't think I put the grades in my grade book. I did not. Oh man, I gotta be a jerk. I'm gonna need those quizzes back. Because I never put it in my grade book.
I think it'll be alright.
Now. I'm sorry. It's the passive board. Make it easy for me. What I'll do is I can multitask. Alright, I will enter them right now. So, what we got to do today is we got to finish up the last little bit of information for exam number one. Your exam has been programmed. It will be in Blackboard. You should have gotten my announcement email. I think I sent that on Friday or Saturday or something like that. So it's going to be an online test. You're going to have to deal with a locked browser. So you're not going to be able to jump between screens. And it does keep track of what you're doing. I'm not going to turn your camera on, though. I'm not going to spy on you. So if you want to be one of those kind of people and take the test in your underwear, have at it. But please don't. But it's going to cover everything we've covered so far. You will see one question on the screen at a time. It is randomized. So you may start off with an essay, you may start off with a short answer, you may start off with a multiple choice question. There's no going back, so don't skip any questions. If you skip a question, it will be marked wrong. You have the entire normal time period for a class, 75 minutes to take the test. So pacing is going to be critical. If you spend 30 minutes on a multiple choice question, you're not going to be able to finish the exam. In my mind, I got it mentally planned that you get at least 1 minute per multiple choice question. You got about 3 minutes for your short answers, and that will give you enough time to do the essays. Within each essay are two hypotheticals. You get to pick which one you want to answer. Don't answer both. I'm not going to give you credit for both. Only answer one. With the longer essays, neither spelling nor grammar will count. Because if you type fast and you make a whole bunch of mistakes, as long as I can kind of figure out that niche to fit it means like no, then you'll be fine. If you are going to use your notes, I would be okay with that, provided, of course, you've been taking notes. If you don't take notes, then I can't help you on that. But obviously, if you're one of those people that take your notes on the computer, you can't use the computer and take the test on the computer. So you might have to print them out. It should not be that hard. If you have been doing what you are supposed to be doing since the beginning of the semester. Coming to class, taking some notes, doing the reading, thinking about this stuff. There are some questions that are softballs. There are some that I throw a hanging curve. But it's a good mix. Any questions about the test? It will open up at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. At some point during the day, before 11:59, you got to give me 75 minutes. Okay? So if you want to do it first thing in the morning, have at it. If you got to work, you can't do it till the afternoon, have at it. But you're all on notice that you have to take it tomorrow. Okay? Don't forget. And one last little thing, and this is serious. If your connection crashes, I can't put you back into the test. It will negate the test, and then I'll have to reprogram it to do it all over again. I've had students get almost all the way done, and their Wi-Fi got wonky, and they got disconnected. So make sure wherever you take it, you have a place where the connection is stable. Okay? And I would definitely advise you do it on a computer as opposed to your phone. But that's just me. One more time. Any questions about the test? Yes? Well, I think so. Can you get on the Blackboard? On a MacBook? Maybe, yeah. The only thing is you got to download that walkdown browser. So in my communication, I did kind of explain it. I gave you the hyperlink where to go. I also put the PDF file inside the exam folder so you can take a look at it. It's just an extension that you cannot open the exam without. So I'm sure if you've done online testing before here, other professors probably made you do it, so you might have it already. But if not, I would suggest that you try plugging it in today. Just to help you if there is any type of technical issues, to give us more time to potentially resolve it. But all my other classes, I've never heard anyone have any issues. Other questions? Do the best you can do. All right, so the last little bit of information we have is we're going to give you some different ways to look at this ethics stuff. Because ethics is different than law. Like I said last class, law is how you must behave. What happens if you do not behave accordingly under the law? Well, there are consequences. What type of consequences? Jail, fines. Well, that's if it's criminal. If it's a criminal case, because if you break the law, it's a criminal case. Jail, fines, death. Or if you act in a way that's not according to the law and you cause someone harm individually, they may also sue you civilly. And if you get sued civilly, what's at stake? Money, money, money. So obviously, it's a good idea, even if we don't like the law, to follow the law. Because if caught, there will be consequences. Ethics are different. How are they different?
It's more about like your morality and what you feel is right or wrong.
Okay. So morality. It's personal. It's not how you must. Would you agree it's how maybe you should?
Yeah.
All right, so ethics is about the right and wrong, not based on being forced to, out of fear of consequences, but it's, you know, just kind of guidance on what you should do. What's kind of like right and what's wrong in a moral sense. What happens if you do something that some people think are unethical? Are there consequences?
Not necessarily.
You'd say yes. All right, give me an example of what a potential consequence could be if you act in a way that's unethical.
Like a lot of criticism?
Public scrutiny. Criticism by?
Your peers or just people?
Colleagues, friends, loved ones. Yeah, yeah. But you said no.
If that's a consequence, then some people might not care.
Some people may not care. Do you have to care what other people think of you?
No.
Not necessarily. I mean, after all, if you have a business, right? Business. You're trying to make as much money as you can to keep the business going. Well, what about that poor person who can't afford to buy whatever it is you're selling? Are we supposed to feel bad that they don't like you? No, not necessarily. So, the challenging part about ethics is in many ways, it's subjective. It's in the eye of the beholder. It's not, there's not like a universal standard behind it. So, here's an example that I want you to remember. Whenever you hear the word ethics, all right, this is actually a quote that came from a U.S. Supreme Court Justice, Potter Stewart. They were dealing with a case that was in the the late 1950s, early 1960s. There was a town that had laws against any type of pornography. So this movie theater owner decided they were going to be a rebel. And they brought in a French movie. And the French, in many ways, are kind of perverted. According to, we'll say, American sensibilities. So this theater owner wanted to intentionally push the envelope. I think, if I remember correctly, at the heart of the movie, there was a woman that felt left alone by her husband, so she went out and had an affair. Well, the city found out about it, and using state law, they sought to fine the movie theater significantly to put it out of business. But they put a claim of First Amendment. Well, the case works its way through trial, through the appellate system, gets all the way up to the Supreme Court. And a justice for the Supreme Court essentially said, well, he couldn't exactly define what pornography was. Because what is pornography? But you know what he said? I know it when I see it. So to a degree, that's ethics. You know, what is ethical? What's unethical? Well, it's completely in the eye of the beholder. What may be very important to you that you consider morally right, someone else may view your righteousness as being a moral wrong. Which is one of the reasons why we tend not to make laws based on ethical standards, because they are so subjective. And to make matters even more challenging, they change over time. So they're not constant. For example, going all the way back to the time of the ancient Greeks and the Romans as well, many of the people back there believed in what today we refer to as hedonism, as kind of like an ethical standard to live by. Anybody know what hedonism is? Hedonism? Hedonism focuses on pleasure. The sense of pleasure. So, Greek hedonists and Roman hedonists essentially believed that something was good, which again is part of the standards of ethics, you know, good versus bad. Something was good if it felt good to you, that you got pleasure from it. One of the primary philosophers is a Greek philosopher by the name of Epicurus. And he essentially believed that the goal in life should be that pursuit of happiness. That you should focus on putting yourself in a position in life where everything that's around you, you enjoy. So what does that mean? Well, you work until you can afford to get the house that you want to live in. And then you make the house in a way that makes you feel good. So when you walk in your house, you're not like, ah, this is a fucking piece of shit. This is a dump, I want a bulldoze. No, this is where I want to be. That whatever you do for work, it's something that you find satisfaction in. That you derive pleasure from, that happiness. Epicurus argued that you should pursue it to the point when you are, until you are free of fear of consequences, the fear of pain even. So go a little further, you know, a little extra libations, put yourself in a happy place, you know, eating the type of food that you like, you know, everything. You should do everything that you can to make yourself feel good in the moment, regardless of any potential consequences. Now, a little hedonism is okay, but of course, what happens when you start going beyond? You could potentially run into problems with that. But the Greeks would be like, yeah, whatever. It'll kind of work its way out. Questions? Another ancient philosophy that was popular for a while, masochism. Masochism. Anyone ever hear of masochism? Anybody? Masochism is the idea that goodness comes from pain. That it comes from sadness. Have you ever heard of the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. Nietzsche once said, "What does not kill me makes me stronger." There are some people that work themselves to the point of pain, and they kind of get off on it. I'll give you an example. One of my buddies runs marathons. He runs multiple marathons a year. He spends every moment that he has free running. And if you've ever driven by someone who's on the side of the road running, don't they look like they are just miserable? They look like they are in pain. You know, it just does not look fun. But there are people who get off on that. That they get a sense of accomplishment. You know, no pain, no gain kind of idea. There are people that are, you know, workout junkies. I lift things up, I put them down, you know, to the maximum level. Well, that's they kind of get off on it. You know, the pleasure sensors are triggered, the endorphins, you know, by that adrenaline boost that they get. There are people that drive crazy and do stunts on, like, motorcycles and dirt bikes. You ever see one of those people, like, they hit the rat and they're doing loops around the bike? I'm like, no, that looks like death to me. But they get off on it. That's their thrill. There are also people that take it to the perverted level as well. You know, there are people that like to get whipped and burned and in the boudoir, I guess you could say. Well, they're masochists. They get off on the pain that they cause their own body. That gives them pleasure. There's also another ethical standards that comes from some of, like, the big cultural movers of ancient civilizations. People like Plato or Aristotle or Sun Tzu or Confucius or Lao Tzu or Cicero or even Jesus to an extent. These are people who attempt to establish the ultimate intrinsic division between right and wrong. Standards that you must adhere to, and they apply absolutely. In other words, they're there forever, unchanging. And there are some standards that every single civilization adheres to as being an absolute right or an absolute wrong. Helping somebody. I've studied almost every single civilization, major civilization, that's ever existed since the beginning of creation. I've never seen one civilization where the simple notion of helping somebody in need is viewed as a bad thing. That is universally recognized and has always been as something good. It's a moral absolutism. Whereas stealing, taking something that is someone else's, that also is viewed as an absolute wrong. Again, you look at all of the religions and philosophies. There's never been one that said taking something from someone else is a good thing. It may be a necessity. It may be a necessary evil, but it's never viewed as a good thing. Ironically, many of these moral standards are intrinsic in our society, and they serve as the foundation of many of our laws. Because after all, the United States legal system is based on the Judeo-Christian tradition that traces its origins back to the Middle East, you know, 2000 BC. questions on these three? Now, in more recent times, with the advent of technology, it is the result of events that take place in nations and on a global level. New views of ethics have come to the forefront. And one of the interesting things is sometimes people are one way in certain situations, and then in another situation, they're adhere to another ethical philosophy. Because, you know, one of the weird things is in our culture, and I saw it coming. I remember back when it was the late 1970s. You know, in our current society, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is not just basically being dumb viewed as being, like, cool? Aren't, like, a lot of characters in pop culture, they're, like, lovable clowns and doofuses? You know, the nerds are the winners. No, they actually had a movie, Revenge of the Nerds. But I remember the first movie where I saw where basically the loser was the hero was a movie called Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And there was a character in there, Spicoli, who was a doped up surfer.
Damn, well, what's up, man?
And he was like viewed as the hero of the movie. And I remember thinking that, like, that's weird. And then you had, like, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. You had Beavis and Butthead, South Park. And it just kind of, like, continued. And it still go. It's like South Park still. The Simpsons, you know, Homer Simpson. You know, those are not exactly, like, pillars of high society. You know, they're lovable buffoons. But that seems to be popular. Well, times change, standards change. In our society today, we have many people that adhere to a philosophy commonly referred to as relativism. Relativism. Relativism is the direct counter of moral absolutism. In moral absolutism, there are these universal, unending standards that are there for all time. Relativists, take the approach of there is no universal truth. There is no good. There is no bad. There is no right. There is no wrong. But rather, it depends. It depends on the who, the what, the where, the when, the why. So, for example, think of the hypothetical that I gave you about the handicapped guy that had the fake bomb because he was trying to get the medicine. Well, if you were a moral absolutist, you would essentially say, no, what he did was absolutely wrong, and he should be punished for causing fear, terror, stealing. So what if it was only enough just to get his prescription still? But he's still stealing. A relativist would say, he actually did nothing wrong in that circumstance. He did nothing wrong because he was trying to survive. And thus, to a sense, it's justified. Now, the problem that people who adhere to relativism have is that there can be no universality. It's completely subjective. So, it would be okay for me to punch you because I needed the money out of your wallet because I was hungry. You know, okay, well that action was justified because of the way you felt in the moment. And it's a dangerous practice, but in our society, we have so many narcissists, people who are self-centered. Their only interest is their own little universal bubble. that you see a lot of them practicing this relativism. Oh, I can park where I want. I can walk where I want. I can do what I want. Just because it makes me happy in the moment. Questions? There are also people who are pragmatists. Pragmatists. A pragmatist is someone who focuses on efficiency. Someone who focusing on efficiency. Trying to get the biggest bang for the buck, so to speak. So, what's effective? That's what you should focus on. So, let's think. We have a situation where I got to come up with an ethical conundrum. All right. So, we have a situation where there is a family in need. They're on the verge of losing their house. All right. What would be the easiest, most efficient solution to that potential problem? Can't get a job. One of the adults, one of the parents, have ongoing medical issues, but they can't pay their bills. What's the most efficient outcome to their problem? There you go. You don't worry about trying to get them help. You don't worry about trying to get them money, because they're never going to get enough help or money to be able to stay in the house. So the most pragmatic solution would be cut their losses and walk away. Right? Do we see that? If they just give up on the house, nobody has to lift the finger to do anything to help them. And they could make that problem go away forever. Again, it's not always the feel good, but the focus is on that effectiveness, that efficiency. Questions? There are also those who practice what at one point was referred to as the common good. But modern philosophers refer to it as utilitarianism. Utilitarianism is focused on making the most amount of people happy as possible with all things. This could be perceived as majoritarianism. This could be perceived as a component of the idea of democracy. Basically, trying to do as much as you can for as many people as possible in any given solution. So, for example, I'll give you a controversial one. Do you remember the COVIDs? Do you remember the COVIDs? When everyone was losing their minds about everything? Because the government was just basically making shit up as they went forward every other day? Well, I'm assuming all of you are still in high school. And maybe your high school did this to you. But I know they did it here. And this is an example of utilitarianism. If you were a student at Quinsigamond Community College, you were not allowed to set foot on this campus unless you had proof that you got the jab. the government, or the school rather, which is part of the government, argued that that was a good thing, thus it should be mandated. But do you know about the jab? They didn't do like any long-term research. This was the first imposed quote-unquote vaccine that never had like years, decades of human trials. They fast-tracked it and mandated that you get the stick. And of course, there is science out there that's showing there are many people that are having health problems as a result of that shot. And we're not going to know the full consequences for decades to come. But the government made a decision. The best way to get people back into school is to force most people to take the shot. Because that was the best information they had at the time. The same is true with all vaccines. By law, you have to get a polio shot. You have to get, measles. You have to get whooping cough. You get like the whole, when you're a kid, when you're very, very young. Your parents took you to the pediatrician. It's like, bam, 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 bam. Every other visit, it's shot, 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 shot. That's all mandated by law. Because basically the idea is even if somebody gets sick because of the vaccine and dies, more people will be saved by preventing the spread of those diseases. The common good. It's not perfect, but they're not trying for perfection. They're just trying to do the best they can for the most amount of people. Questions? I got two last ones. I'm going to click them up at the same time. Because they obviously are the exact opposites of one another. And then we're going to go over your homework, and then we're going to call it a class. Consequentialism and non-consequentialism. I'll define them, and then I'm going to give you a real-life example. Bless you. Consequentialism is an ethical viewpoint that how someone does something. It's the ethical viewpoint of how someone does something. One's conduct. That's the basis of judgment. So if you do something the right way, I just kind of gave it away, that means you're going to be praised for doing it the right way. It doesn't matter what the results are. It's only the doing. Whereas if you kind of go off the rails and screw up, you're going to get criticism not because of the outcome, but because how you did it. To give you a quick mental analogy, think of like when you were in math class. You know, when you had to show your work. If you showed your work and it was done the right way, you'd get credit for it. Whereas if you did the process wrong, it would be marked wrong. That's a consequentialist view. You're suffering consequences for your action. Non-consequentialism focuses on the outcome. Consequentialism is the process. Non-consequentialism focuses on the results, the outcome. So in other words, if your goal is to do something that's good, you do anything that it takes to get that result. Have you ever heard of the philosopher Machiavelli? Machiavelli
one said, this is not the exact quote, but this is how it's translated in modern society, that the ends justify the means. Essentially, you should be free to do whatever you want to get the results you seek. So, if you want to get a job, you make up a bogus resume. So essentially, you lie to get the result. And then once you get the result, then you can do good things. Do we get the difference? Oh, I love this example. I told my family I literally want the result of what I'm going to talk about etched on my gravestone. I'm so proud of it. So, a few years ago, this is probably about 8 years now at this point, the library trustees in my town decided they wanted to build a new library. If you've ever been to Sutton, our library literally is in the basement of Town Hall. It's small, it's tiny. So the library trustees decided, we're going to go out and we're going to get a state grant, and we're going to build a new library. Well, they had like vision boards, and they had multiple meetings, and the people that were the friends of the library could go and compile their wish list. And they presented this dream board to the architects, and they drafted up what suddenly went from being a library to being called a community center. That, if it was built, would have been the second largest town building, second only to the high school. It was going to be like 20,000 square feet, multiple floors, conference rooms. But you don't really didn't talk much about the books itself. It's kind of like the whole point of the library. But they were like, this is going to be great. We're going to build this big building. Well, the only problem is they designed the building without first figuring out where they're going to put it. So that was a problem. Why? Because they wanted the library. They didn't care what it took to get the library. So come hell or high water, they were going to figure it out after the fact. Well, at the time, I was, as I am currently this year, the chairman of the Board of Selectmen, the town of Sutton. So the library trustees came before us. And they came and they made their shtick. They made their presentation. Well, once they made their presentation, all of my colleagues got to ask questions. But I was the chairman, so I went last. Oh, man, did I have questions. I asked things like, where are you going to put it? Oh, they picked a parcel of town property that's protected farmland, and it just happens to have vernal pools on there. You know what a vernal pool is? Vernal pool is an area that has constantly flowing high-level water tables. So at any point during the year, essentially, it could be flooded. Not because of rain, it's just groundwater seeps to the surface. And it's not seasonal. It could be at any point.
Is that like those little
pockets on the grass? Yeah, exactly. So this site had vernal pools. Well, here's the funny thing. Under federal law, if you're going to build on a site that has vernal pools, you have to bring in the United States government, the Army Corps of Engineers. Well, suddenly that adds millions of dollars to the cost. You're picking a site that doesn't have electricity. Does your price estimate have the cost of running the pools? No. Does your price estimate include the cost, because there's no sewerage there, of putting in a septic system? No. Okay, you're going to build this structure that is like 8 times larger than your current square footage. Are you going to have to hire additional staffing? No. Where's the recurring cost for the utilities going to come from? Is that in your price estimate? No.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me you came to me with a proposal that you want to build this monstrosity of a structure, and you can't tell us how much it's going to cost the town annually to keep it open? And you're saying you're not going to have to hire additional space, even though it's 8 times larger, and you want to open it more, you want to have it open on the weekends? You don't take in the cost of utilities, of making it so that way the building can actually operate, and you want to build it on wetlands. Huh. Never once did I said that I was necessarily against the library. But I had a problem with how they were essentially lying to get what they wanted. They came at the library project as non-consequentialists. They were going to say and do anything to get what they wanted. Whereas I took the consequentialist approach. Look, you're going to have us approve this building, and suddenly it's potentially going to cost twice as much as what you're proposing, and that doesn't include increased staffing and running utilities. Where's the money going to come from? So you know what I want to have on my gravestone when I die? Lemanic, killer of libraries. The overwhelming majority of the residents of my town appreciated my forthright, well, I'm not really forthrightness, but my willingness to ask questions. Because in asking those questions, I exposed the fact that it was a flawed plan, and thus saved the town from this boondog. Town meeting voted it down. It's a thunderous applause.
Never try to get it.
Nope. I know, right? Actually, the funny thing is two of the trustees were so embarrassed and humiliated, they quit. And the town librarian has since moved on to another town, so. Now, were they right and I was wrong, or vice versa? Well, it really depends, doesn't it? On your perspective. If you were one of the people that really wanted the library, then again, the ends justify the means. If you want it so bad, you're willing to do anything to get it. As opposed to those who focus on doing things the right way. Because if you do things the right way, you'll always end up with the right results. It is a simple truism. Have you ever found yourself in a position where you felt the need to lie? And then how many subsequent lies did you have to make to keep that lie going? You know, it's a never-ending cycle of lie after lie after lie after lie. And eventually you're going to forget what you said because it's a lie. But you want to know something amazing? If you tell the truth the first time, you're never going to forget what you said because it was the truth. That's consequentialism. Questions? All right, good. So don't be surprised if in a multiple choice question or an essay, one of these come up and I basically ask you, just what is it? Give me an example. Did you get the list?
Well, 1 second, please.
All right.
I forgot the top.
All right, no, that's fine. All right, why don't you take out your homework? I want to hear what your thoughts were. On what we had to do. Let me pull up. This was, I forgot what exam. I know one of them was the Cop Killer song, right?
Yeah.
Was that the assignment I used? What was the other one?
The Indian.
Oh, yeah. All right. So this is an example where if you follow the checklist, which we gave you in last class, there is no right, or rather, there is no wrong. Anything that you put down is right. I just want to hear your thoughts. So, are you good with that?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, let's go back to the checklist. Bum, bum, bum. Slideshow. current slide. Do, 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 do. Little different than the one I gave you. But that's all right. It's basically the same thing. All right. So let me see. Ardeen, did you do your homework? It's a yes or a no.
I did.
Okay. Well, let's try. So, we're going to have you do number one with the first essay. What happened in the first question? If you want to write that down, then it's fine. Okay.
The reports of evidence that the GE matches target down to small town, most small towns.
Yeah.
Where there's obsession, abortion.
No, you're okay. So we have this device, right? This device that's made by a company. Why would a company make a device?
To get more money.
To get more money. Okay. Is the device itself necessarily good or bad?
It depends.
How?
I mean, in this situation, it's bad because of it mostly depends on people's life.
Okay, but is the device itself good or bad? Or is it how people use it?
How people use it.
Okay, right. So I think we're going to agree. And does anyone disagree that a company making a product for sale, that is neither good nor bad? It just is, right? But it could be how people use it that could be good or bad. How are the people using it to do what?
Abortions.
Who was getting abortions? Or let me put it this way. What was being aborted?
The babies.
What type of babies?
Females.
Why?
Because in India, the most wanted guys' population to go up against women.
Okay, very good. Very good. Thank you. Nicely done. Alright, so we got the gist, right? We have this device. If I remember correctly, it's an ultrasound machine, right? So you can basically, that's the radar that you put on a pregnant woman's belly, and you can look inside. And in India, they were using the device to determine whether the baby was a boy or a girl. Michael, did you do homework?
Yeah.
What's the issue?
They're killing the girls.
They're killing the girls. What makes this a critical issue, in your opinion?
Eventually, there's not going to be enough girls and guys to continue the population.
Oh, so you're looking at it in the sense if they just continue to kill girls, it's going to cause a population reduction.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
I think bad.
Okay, why?
Because... I think bad in like 20, 30, 40 years, there's going to be less population.
Okay. That's not really saying why you think it's bad, or is that the reason why you think it's bad?
Yeah.
Because it's going to cause their population to shrink dramatically.
Yeah.
Okay, very good, very good. Thank you. Matt, did you do homework? All right. So we know what's going on. Who's impacted by this event?
The companies, the Indian families, and doctors.
Okay, we'll focus on that three. Because again, I don't really require you to take it all the way out to the point of potential million.
Yeah.
So, how
are, how's the company impacted by this situation?
Because they're the ones selling the emissions.
Okay. And what does that do to or for the company?
Makes profit.
Makes profit. Do you think making profit's a bad thing?
Depends on, I mean, for them, no.
Why?
So they can keep production.
And if the company makes profit, who is impacted by that?
The workers.
The workers?
Yeah.
Because what happens to the workers in a company if the company makes no money?
Then they're laid off.
They have no job. All right. And then what happens to their existence?
They're broke.
They're broke, they could lose their housing, no food for their kids, etc.
Yeah.
So, the fact that the company's making, and by the way, is the device itself designed to be harmful?
No.
No, why?
Well, it's meant to help in clinical, and not like, for doctors. It's meant for doctors.
Okay. Have you ever seen an ultrasound?
Yeah.
Okay. What?
Just an image.
Yeah, just the image of it. Right, so you can basically kind of see what's going on. You know, they just don't use ultrasounds also for, you know, looking at babies. They also use it if you have, like, intestinal issues. But I'll give you an example. All right? You all ready for this one? My son was breech. You know what that means? He was upside down. Instead of being head down, he was bum down. And the problem is if a baby, when they out of mom, is bum down, their hips will be ripped apart because they're being forced down the vaginal canal. So their legs will do some of these, which meant even if he survived the birth, he would have been paralyzed, crippled for his whole life. And chances are, as he made his way out, he would have ripped the inside of my wife to shreds, possibly killing her. To make matters worse, he had the umbilical cord around his neck. So it's very possible that when my son was born and she forced him out, inadvertently she could have ripped his head off. Thank God for the ultrasound device, because my wife's doctor saw that and he got scheduled for a C-section. An emergency one, immediately. Brought her in real quick, made an appointment, cut her open, take the baby out. My son is 25 years old right now. Still alive today. But for that technology, I could have lost my son and my wife. So there you go, right? It's not designed to do bad things. All right, company. You said the Indian families. How would that impact the Indian families?
Well, you know, if a mother's pregnant and she's not able to get the proper care with ultrasound, then again, if you don't make her.
I just gave you a real-life example. So it's not the technology that's necessarily bad. But what about the idea of killing just girls?
That seems very targeted.
It does. Does.
Yeah.
How would that impact a family? What happens if they really didn't want a girl and they only wanted sons? They're probably going to be more likely to do what once they know?
Abort it.
Yeah, because if you don't know what's inside the oven and it out, you get a surprise. Right?
Yeah.
By the way, with neither of my kids, we didn't want to know what the gender was. And luckily I had one of each. So, yeah, so they did not want to. So they're going to probably be more inclined to go and get the ultrasound because they want to know.
Yeah.
How's it going to impact the doctors?
They're going to have to do the procedure.
They're going to have to do the procedure.
Yeah.
But they're also going to have more pregnant women coming to them saying, can I make an appointment? Can I make an appointment? Can I make an appointment? Are they necessarily going to be against it?
Depends.
Why does it depend?
Depends what the doctor's values are.
Ooh, what is the primary oath that doctors are supposed to take? Anybody know?
I mean, they're not supposed to give their opinions.
Well, there's that. But what is the oath that doctors must take before they become doctors?
That they must, No.
That they must treat everyone fairly no matter what, even, like, something along those lines. Like, even if, like, a killer comes in, they have to still work on them, like, no matter what. Like, with this
the name. Hippocratic oath. Their job is to give medical treatment to everybody in need. What if you were a doctor and a pregnant woman came into your office and you knew, because she let it slip, I need to know what the gender is because I need to know if I'm going to get an abortion.
Your job.
Can't do your job. Huh. But in doing your job, are you not helping assist with murder?
It's part of the lot.
Because you're helping the mother, but you're killing the child.
Yep.
Are you supposed to do actions that result in murder? Doctors are supposed to help everybody.
Yep.
Regardless of the circumstances. So, could you see how doctors might have quite a conundrum? Yeah, this is huge. Good. Nicely done. Alright, so here we go. Lex, did you do your homework? Give me an alternative to this process of using ultrasound machines to determine if pregnant women have girls so they can be aborted. So maybe they should send, like, a GE employee to run the machine as opposed to...
Right.
Okay, interesting. Okay. Question for you. Do you know what a company called Remington makes?
Guns.
Okay. What is the purpose of a gun?
To shoot.
Right. Why to shoot? Exactly. There could be a million. It's a tool, right? It's like an ultrasound machine. It's just a tool. It's a tool that maybe you could use for sport. Maybe it's a tool that you're a farmer and you need to prevent the coyotes from going after your livestock. Maybe you live in a bad part of town and you need to keep the bad guys from coming in. Should a Remington employee go out and stay in the houses of everyone who buys a Remington shotgun? Well, what's the difference with someone in GE going and working and making sure that the doctors are using it?
Well, I mean, the doctor doesn't necessarily own the equipment. The company they work for does. It doesn't really matter, I guess. I don't really have a good counter to that. So.
Neither do I. I'm just throwing you a curveball.
Yeah.
Because this proves the point, like I said. There is no right or there's no wrong to any of these responses. You know, you just try doing the best you can, you know, with the situation as is presented. So, are there alternatives? Yeah, he presented one. Does anyone have any other alternatives? You're good, yeah?
Stop selling in India.
Oh, man, stop selling in India. Stand up. Stop selling in India. How many people live in India?
A lot.
More than anyone else on Earth. India's finally surpassed China as the most populated nation on Earth. How many potential customers do you have in India?
A lot.
Where would you sell your product to? Alternatively, as opposed to selling it to India?
Anywhere else.
Okay, that's fair. Do you have any other alternatives?
Yeah, I said, like, just because, like, it's only some specific places, because in the question that you said, it said, like, they try to sell to specific small cities that, like, really, like, want to kill their babies because of the dowries.
What's a dowry?
It's like goods, cash, whatever it is. Like, when their daughters get married, they have to give, like, money or something like that for the other family.
Yeah, yeah. You know what my father-in-law had to give me to marry my wife? Ooh, let me tell you. Now, you know what he said? Good luck. Yeah, so that has an impact on families. Because what happens if you, as a dad, are working your ass off and you don't have a ton of money and you can't afford to raise enough money to provide a dowry? Where's that girl going to end up?
On the street.
Potentially. Doing things that ladies who get kicked out of houses have to do to survive. And would you want your daughter to do that?
No.
But would you be more inclined to put her out of her misery? Oh, no. All right, good, good. Does anyone else have any other alternatives?
My alternative I had was GE only sells, or like they have contracts that they only sell to people who listen, the hospitals that listen to. So like when they sell this, they're like, if I sell this to you, you gotta listen to this bit.
Okay. So you're trying to hold the customer to a higher ethical standard.
Yeah.
Okay. What happens if they don't?
They don't get permission.
Well, let's say they said to you, yeah, I'll do that. So you make the sale, you get the money, you put it in your bank account, you deliver the good, and you find out 3 years later they're not. What can you do about it? Ooh, that's clever. That's clever. You could sever the service contract. And ultimately, who do you think knows best how to fix a machine? Someone who works in the company or just some random tech guy? Yeah, I like that one. That's a good one. Anyone have anything else? Okay. Well, I'm not going to waste our time doing this because I think we covered all and we thought about the other alternatives differently. Is this a situation where there could be more than one outcome that's different than what's going on? Yeah. Out of everything that we've heard, what could potentially work? Give me some potentially easily implemented alternatives. So the service contract clause. Okay, that could be a potentially good one. Anyone else? Have protected sex. Put the responsibility on the parents to begin with. Now, I don't remember exactly what was in there, but I do want to kind of possibly go off on a tangent, just something to think about. Do any of you know anybody from India? Do you?
Yeah.
Are they in America?
No.
No. They're over there still?
Yeah.
What's life like for them over there?
Did a bunch of big votes, so they sort of leadership. So you don't really get, there's like local governance in like some areas where people have money, like people with money live, but if you live in like regular area, the government does not care about you. And most of the people don't really have, like the government will add a new road, but they don't have enough money to like have a car, so there's no point in that road, it's sort of just like for show.
India not only has the largest population, but it is one of the most poorest developed countries on Earth, because it is developed. They have modern technology, but the vast majority of people are so poor. They are desperate. There's poverty, there's crime, there's disease, there's dirt. So maybe it wouldn't be necessarily a bad thing for them to shrink the population. But if you shrink the population, do you end up in a death spiral? Would you be able to recover? That's what happened in China. The communists in China implemented a one-child policy. It was the law of China. I think it went in effect in the 80s. So by law, you could not have more than one child. This is the reason why there are a lot of Chinese girls that maybe you met, because they were adopted. Because the parents would
have a child, see that it was a girl, and they'd get rid of it. They'd give it up to adoption. And then they'd get pregnant again, hoping that it would be a boy. And if not, they'd give it away until they had a son. Because they were allowed to keep a child. And ultimately they wanted sons. Because China still, like India, is a patriarchal society.
What would happen if you had, like, twins? Would you have to get rid of one kid or kill them both?
Flip a coin.
Yeah, what if it was, like, two boys?
Flip a coin. Law says you only can keep one.
And that's still more.
No, China realized that there's, like, a whole generation. So, in, like, in America, and again, I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm pretty sure there's, like, 52% female and 48% male. In China, your generation, it's something like 60% male, 40% female. Because of that one-child policy. So China feared the economic consequences in the long term if suddenly there's not enough couples making the next generation that they could lose economically, politically, militaristically. So, but they did reverse it. All right, real quick, let's do the other one.
And then we'll call it a class. Body count. Cop kill. I remember when this came out. This was crazy. Hayden, you do your homework?
All right, give me the facts real quick.
All right, the facts I wrote down was basically Time Warner and Ice-T song Cop Killer was released. Basically, Ice-T's lyrics in the song promoted violence, such as slitting a officer's throat, promoting violence and anti-police lyrics. Time Warner at the time was in debt, so they produced it and distributed it for profit and money. Yeah, right there. And the critics argued the song promoted violence against cops and inflated violence throughout the city.
Perfect. Good, 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 good facts. Are you good? You're easy. All right, critical issues. What issues we are going on? Someone volunteer. Give me an issue. We don't have time to play a normal game.
The relationship between cops and citizens.
Cops and the citizens. That's huge, right? Don't you want community policing? Don't you want the police to feel like they're part of the community and the community to feel the cops are part of their community? Another issue.
Who could get sued?
Who could get sued?
Time Warner.
Time Warner. Because what happens if, God forbid, a cop is killed?
Yeah,
there you go. That could be a motivating factor. Other critical issues.
First Amendment and disorderly conduct.
Ooh. Don't you have a right to say what you want to say? But are you not supposed to use your words carefully? It is the dynamic. I like that. Any other issues? All right. Who are the stakeholders? What?
The police.
The police? They could be victimized. Who also are the stakeholders?
The artist?
Mm-hmm. The artist, right? They sell music. That's their job. They gotta get money. Who also?
The CEO.
The CEO, the?
The listeners.
The listeners, the fans. Maybe they like the band. Anyone else? Cops, okay. All right, so let's think about it this way. Are there any alternatives to releasing this song?
You could censor some parts.
You could censor it. I remember when the CDs used to come out. You'd sit there and listen to a song, and it would be like the radio edits. Like, beep, 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 beep. That was always fun. But yeah, you could have done that. Any other alternatives? Yeah, the label might just say no to the song. They do that all the time to bands. Trust me, I was in a band. We were on our second CD was released on a small independent label. And it was supposed to be, we had 12 songs, and the record label said, no, we only have, we're only going to pay you for 8. And they wanted us to do a cover. So we actually only did 7 original on our second album. So they have complete control, because they're paying for it. So they could have said no to the song. And the other alternatives. All right. Is there an ethical implication to any of these possibilities? What would be the impact if they didn't put the song out?
Time Warner would have been bankrupt and out of business.
Time Warner might have lost money. Might have been big because it might have sparked a protest.
Whoever artist on the side, can like not want to join the label because of when
what happens if the next big artist that could go platinum sees how one band is treated? Do I want to be censored by the label? That could hurt the bottom line. Anything else? Make sure before you leave,
you put them up here.
If as you're studying, you have any questions, send me an email. But do not forget, the exam will open up at 8 a.m. tomorrow. It will stay open until 11:59 p.m. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, check your email. Thank you. Good job on this, by the way. Nicely done.